Throughout all of history, they've only talked about the fame, never the hard work, never the elbow grease, never the early call time.
Good morning, early call time.
Good morning, cock-a-doodle-doo.
Whenever I say that, I always want to do like the Robin Williams, Good Morning Vietnam.
But we're in.
Why would you not?
I don't know. I should. We should have done that
from day one.
Yeah,
but we'll it's not early. By the way, I've been thinking about this. Like, what time are most of do these start? Because this one's at 11:30. You offered an earlier time, and I specifically pushed it as late as possible.
usually 10 o'clock.
Oh, so I'm late by saying 11.
Yeah. You are. Yeah. You'd be wrapped up in.
Right.
Wow, sorry, guys.
Oh, no, it's okay.
The whole day has been thrown off.
Totally okay. The person that you're hearing on the couch right now is an editor named Hunter Vi.
Wow.
Well done with the last name.
Thank you. Yeah. Thanks to Brian Goldberg on that one. If you haven't heard Brian Goldberg's episode, he is actually Hunter and I's agent.
Yes.
And he's the one that hooked me up with Hunter to be on the show today. And thank you, Brian.
You did some networking.
I did some networking.
That's right.
Hunter here.
That's right. Made some connections.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Relationships.
Yes.
LinkedIn.
Yep.
I don't know. I'm just throwing out terms.
if you want to listen to Brian's podcast, it's episode number 43. I did my research.
Good for you.
Beforehand.
I did as well and listened to it this morning.
Yeah. You were saying something about brushing your teeth.
Yeah, I had Brian in the bathroom with me. I was listening. As you guys also were there.
That's weird.
Yeah. That's getting ready this morning.
Yeah. Hadn't even met us, so that's got to be
It was very weird, yes.
Yeah.
But he seems like a nice guy. Hunter?
Yeah.
So, we're going to have a good podcast.
I'm on board.
Yeah.
I'm going to stick around for this.
We're going to go forward with this?
Yes.
All right.
Now, Hunter, what would you say you're most famous for as far as...
thank you.
Did I cut out too?
All of a sudden it was gone. Oh, no.
Yeah, I heard screaming in the background.
Weird. Are we out again?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Weird. You're still here.
There we go.
We're all back.
Sorry, we couldn't hear each other in the headphones.
Technical difficulties.
What would you say is the most famous show that you've worked on?
I guess it has to be The Walking Dead.
Okay.
But when I first started, I worked on like really small shows that were cultish, and we were glad to get like a couple million viewers and did 13 episodes. And we thought that was going to be the case with The Walking Dead. And when it came out, who thought there would be zombies on AMC and that would be a big hit? I mean, it was Mad Men and Breaking Bad.
Yeah.
And then they let us go and make a little horror movie a week, and
and
we found a huge audience. It was a huge surprise.
Yeah. I'm a huge fan of zombies, as you can tell.
Yes, right above you.
Yeah.
Actual zombies.
Actual zombies in cases. Yeah. So when the show came on, I was very excited, and you actually got to cut the pilot.
I did cut the pilot,
which is amazing.
Thank you. It was an awesome experience. When I was doing it, we just, you know, David Tattersall was the DP and Frank Darabont wrote it and directed it. And when I read the script, I didn't realize that it was basically one person. I mean, you realize when you read, but it's not until you start editing it where you're like, I don't have anything to cut to. It's just one guy going through this discovery of the, you know, post-apocalyptic, you know, new zombie landscape and trying to figure out what's going on. And it's literally like a action movie, it's a sci-fi, it's Twilight Zone, it's a Western, and then it becomes a crazy, you know, zombie horse getting ripped apart, guns everywhere, you know, in a tank. It was just a really, really great experience to be able to work on that.
By the way, speaking of horses being ripped apart, how exactly did they pull that stunt off?
Well,
because I'm sure they didn't pull apart a real horse.
No, but if you look at it, when you go back and watch it, you'll see there's a guy with like a Hawaiian shirt on, and he's the horse's trainer or handler or whatever, but dressed up like a zombie. So when they're going up and the horde's getting him, a couple of those, there's a woman that's in there too with blonde hair, I think. A couple of them are actually the horse's handler, and then they get the horse down to the ground, and then they swap it out with a dummy horse, and Greg Nicotero's team goes in and fills it with barbecue and stuff that you want to eat, and then they just go and attack.
Oh, that's awesome.
And then there's like three cameras just hovering over them and going in and out, and people yelling at them, "Eat it!" and stuff like that. So.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
And
we cut all that without sound because you just have people yelling,
right?
Don't hurt the horse, and, right? You know, and then we have to go back in and put all that in,
right?
Don't actually eat the horse,
no.
Right.
There's a great picture of Rick in between takes sitting with the horse because it was so hot and they're down there shooting in summer and they are both just exhausted, just sitting beside each other hanging out. It's really awesome. It's a great picture.
That's really cool.
Mm-hmm.
We should have a podcast about horse wranglers and have those people on. Because I want to hear the story of how you progress from, like, oh, I really like things equestrian related to I'm wearing zombie makeup in Atlanta in the middle of the summer.
That's true.
People are eating the horse that I'm supposed to be taking care of. That's just a side note.
The animal wranglers, they're always, it's always the best part, though. It's always a lot of fun. The show them on now, we have dogs. We have these hellhounds. And so, but they're the sweetest things ever. And like the problem is making them not look cute because they just want their snack. They're just trying to do, like, you know, so they're telling them like what to do. And and they're like 9 month old Rottweilers, but they're supposed to be these big, mean, like devil dogs. But they're really just sweet little things that just want to get cuddled and, you know, have their ears pet.
I'm just at work.
I couldn't be on that set. I'm kind of scared of dogs, so, big dogs.
Mm.
So, that would be – editing them would be okay, but not having them in
prison. Especially when you see how sweet they are.
Yeah, yeah. And what show are you working on right now?
I am working on a show called Damien, which is based on the 1976 movie The Omen.
Yes.
So
that's awesome.
It's about Damien 30 years later realizing
that's cool. Now,
what his fate is.
For people that don't know, there's like a hint that he would be running for president in some of the Omen movies. I think the third one.
Sure.
We're
based off the original 76 movie with some allusions to some of that stuff, but for the most part, it's just the 76, and then going. He's a 30-year-old is the idea. So the math doesn't. Totally,
it's a little
totally,
off.
Totally
but that's okay.
Yeah.
It was a great movie, and I'm sure it's going to be.
It's pretty cool.
It hasn't aired yet, has it?
No. We were first doing 6 episodes, and then Shaker Kapoor is our director on the pilot. I'm totally blanking right now. Elizabeth, and was nominated for a couple of Academy Awards. And so started rolling in. They're like, oh, this is really great. We want 10 episodes. And so they moved from 6 to 10. And
congratulations.
Yeah. So we're still hanging out there.
Yeah. Work is good.
Yeah, it is good. Yeah. We don't have air dates. We get to play with it for a while, which is really nice.
That's amazing.
Yeah. It's pretty phenomenal.
As far as your workflow goes, since it's 10 episodes, it's for cable or is it?
It's for cable. It's for A&E.
Okay. It's for A&E. What's your schedule like? Do you get a number of days for your editor's cut and your director's cut?
Typically, what you would say is that it's like a month from beginning to end from when they start shooting until you lock it. But, I mean, I haven't worked on a normal show in a long time. The Walking Dead was the last show that was like normal structure where we had, you know, they shoot for 8 days and then you get your 4 days of director's cut and then, we work with your producers and then your studio network and then you lock and then you're done.
Right.
And then you move on to your next episode, maybe a couple of days off in between if you're lucky. Usually not, but sometimes.
Yeah.
But I haven't had that in years. I did the first 3 seasons of The Walking Dead. So I did pilot up until the finale of season 3.
Which is an amazing episode, by the way.
Yeah.
Oh.
All your stuff is great. I'm geeking out a little bit. It was kind of... Yeah, it's kind of awesome that you're here. Oh, so
I like violence and mayhem. That tends to be my thing.
Yeah.
Horror.
Speaking of Sons of Anarchy, which you also worked on.
I did. I did recut the pilot to that. Sidney Wolinsky cut the pilot to Sons. And then when it got picked up, they did some recasting and stuff. And so I was brought in to recut that and then work in the new cast because it didn't originally have Clay. Ron Perlman wasn't originally in it. It was a different actor. So they, and then the gang itself had some different people, and they say they kind of moved that around. And I sit on that, did the first 2 seasons of Sons of Anarchy.
That's cool. Awesome.
Not the popular ones. It became much more popular after I left.
Those are great seasons, though. I mean, there's some amazing stuff in there.
We had some fun.
You said you recut the pilot. Does that happen quite a bit in the television world to the people that don't know?
Yeah, I think it does because I did a pilot for a CW called The 100, and it was called the presentation package or the presentation. It wasn't called like the episode. Like, so the idea was you don't have to follow all the same rules that you would for like a television show, which has to be a certain length, and you know, yeah. So Yeah, so I think it's pretty common that once you get picked up and they kind of figure out, okay, this is actually the show that we're going to go with, and production starts back up, they'll come back in and they'll shoot different scenes or they'll recast a couple of things. It's pretty common.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because you were saying that Ron Perlman wasn't in the original.
Which is pretty amazing, because he's a huge, important character.
Yeah. So they recast his character.
And then they reshot all that stuff.
Yeah. I see.
So was it the whole pilot that was reshot, or just...
They did not reshoot the whole pilot. They just went and reshot, like, very specific moments in some places, and then other places they reshot whole scenes. Okay. But in some places, they just went in and, like, we just need this shot. And so it was, like, very specific, like, pinpoint stuff going in and getting. And then other sections were completely left as they were.
Awesome.
It's a pretty sick pilot. He's getting burned alive. He loves it. I'm into the dark stuff.
I tend to like the dark stuff also and get really excited about, I don't know, horrible people doing horrible things to each other, I guess. It's kind of my thing. Awesome.
Hunter can be my new best friend.
Yeah,
sorry.
We should work
sorry,
together.
Andrew.
No, that's fine.
Well, you've edited all these shows, but you came from somewhere, Hunter. Where did you come from originally?
Well, like, how did I get into this business?
Yeah.
Take us back to day one.
Yeah.
Not of, I guess, of Earth. We could go that far back we want. Or we could.
I don't know if I can track myself back that far, but I was born in West Virginia, and I lived there until I was 9, and then I started moving around a lot.
Where in West Virginia?
I was born in Charleston, West Virginia, lived there until I was 9, then I moved to Morgantown, West Virginia, lived 9 months old, and then I moved to Morgantown until I was 9, then moved to Miami and then New York, and doing all this moving around, like, I ended up getting a TV somewhere along the way, and I kind of stayed up late watching, USA Up All Night and B-movies, and then my parents got me cable and MST3K, and I kind of just, you know, I was moving around so much and always had friends, and so I found late night B-movies and kind of fell in love with monster movies and that kind of stuff, And I was petrified about doing, like, school projects. I didn't like to get up in front of people and talk, so I would do video projects. I'd take out my parents' video camera and go and do these things, and my teachers would usually let me do that, and so I could put it together. And then when I went to college, I went to a very small private school that didn't have any media, really, but they had sociology classes, and then they had sociology of media, and I kind of fell into going, oh, maybe there's something I can do here with communications. I didn't really think that was a job. Transferred to a school that had a TV station and went and got really involved with that. And we had a friend whose dad worked at a school called Full Sail in Orlando, Florida, which was dedicated to doing this.
Oh, cool.
And I actually was like, that's where I want to go to school. But my parents were like, you have to finish your 4-year degree. So then I went down and I went to Full Sail, and they had more avids than anybody else. At this point, I knew I wanted to be an editor after working at the TV station at the first college.
Mm-hmm.
So I went there and just fell in love with editing and then made the move out here. Made a short film right out of film school with my wedding money, and had my wife had to come and write a check to get the film because we had shot on film.
Oh, wow.
And we were sitting there at the Telecine house, not able to get it out. And so she came, wrote the check. We went, locked ourselves in a cutting room, made the movie, premiered it in Orlando. And then the three of us that made the movie, we hopped in a car and drove cross country together.
Oh, that's a fun trip, isn't it?
Scary.
Yeah.
I was petrified driving across the border to, you know, welcome to California. And I was like, what have I done?
Right.
I don't have a job. I have like $300. Like, this is crazy.
So your wife was like, no, we don't need a toaster. You go make a movie with that money.
Well, at that point we were engaged, and she had a job, and I was just spending money, and she was supporting everything that we were doing. It was kind of nuts, but we were.
Ladies, that's what you need to do.
Sometimes it works.
Listen closely. Yeah.
Sometimes.
But yeah, I mean, it was, I guess finding what you really want to do and being young and not having a huge amount of attachments. And we had a dog. Mm-hmm. I had a dog and a fiance. And a car. So I just, she stayed in Florida and had a job, and I came out to California to try and find a job.
Mm.
That's cool. I mean, I think it's easier. Well, and then she came out after you.
I got my first job at a small post house that did high-end commercials and worked there for about 6 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And so I said, hey, I got a job. You should come out. I can actually make money now. And I had a really cheap apartment in Culver City. And so she came out, and then I lost that job because they went out of business.
Oh.
But then I got an internship at the American Cinema Editors internship, AC internship.
Oh, nice.
And that just changed everything. I mean, that really got my foot in the door. And this wonderful editor named Lori Coleman gave me a job on a show called The Shield, where I was my first union job as an assistant editor. I did that for first two seasons, and then by the time season three came around, there were a couple of openings, and I moved both of the assistants up to editing, and I've been very lucky to be editing ever since.
That's great.
And what I've seen that works to get, once you get that bump, once you get the chair and you get to do it, is staying on that show for a while and showing loyalty and really honing your craft, and then in between that, really trying to find the other show. But it's got to be hard when you're doing something that's 24 episodes.
Oh yeah,
because then there's not really a whole lot of time in between.
Yeah. Right.
I mean, and those schedules are brutal.
Oh yeah, yeah.
I mean, they're really crazy.
When you said, you know, it's usually about a month. That's being generous.
But they, but then they start overlapping on top of each other. When I was doing that show on the CW, I mean, we were just like, everything was just happening all at once. I mean, that's just how it is now. I mean, the show that I'm on now, Damon, we just locked. They're doing reshoots for the pilot. Back to that.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, we're doing new scenes for the pilot.
Right.
And for the second episode. We were supposed to originally be wrapping this week, and I just locked my first episode, which is episode 3.
Wow.
So, and we were supposed to have been wrapped, done, like, mixed, getting ready for air, delivered.
Yeah.
We're not even down the road on visual effects. I mean, it's just...
Oh.
So schedules now are just... Everything's just, like, crazy. So I'll get notes on episode, like, 7, and then I'm cutting the finale, but then new footage is coming in on the pilot. I mean, it's just, like, every day, it's just, you know, you work on 3 or 4 things, and you just kind of... You know, get used to it.
Sure.
What was the process like with The Walking Dead and doing that pilot? Because obviously it's the first episode, and so...
The pilot to The Walking Dead was... They shot that 15 or 16 days, I think, was the shoot on that one.
Okay.
And to give you an idea, they shot... That one was like... they only shot like 24 hours of film on that. Mm-hmm. That was a very low amount of film. But it was very exact in the lighting and in the shooting and in the it was a very deliberate shoot, that one. But then, yeah, I mean, I cut it for like, I don't know, 4 or 5 days after that, and then Frank came in. That one, that was easy because Frank was the director and the writer and the executive producer and the guy that says you will lock the show now.
Yeah.
And I think we locked that one in like 3 days. That one was fast.
Wow.
That was like the fastest it's gone. That was really quick.
Yeah.
Now, that being said, we noodled with that until the very end as well. You're always making refinements and adjustments, but he and I got through the process enough within 3 days to show it to others and then say, okay, cool, and I'll give us some feedback. And then, you know, then you make your minor adjustments from there. So locked is never, it's always latched. It's
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, we delivered that episode. We delivered everything the first season. We delivered to AMC to air and pulled every single one of them back to make some type of like a new visual effect or a new color correction or a new ADR or something.
Right.
So. Interesting. Right. We do have a question.
We do.
From a listener that's a legitimate question.
A legitimate question? Unlike these other fake ones?
Well, someone asked if your refrigerator was running. That was one of the questions that was posed.
That's a good one.
If you want to answer that, that's fine. You don't have to.
It's work. I don't know. It's working.
Okay, good. this question comes from Travis Simpson.
Hi, Travis.
He's asking, how do you prepare for a new project? Do you watch a bunch of horror movies before something like The Walking Dead, or do you just come to the material cold so you don't have anything influencing you?
You know, the right answer would be is that I do a lot of prep stuff, but I actually really like to come to a project cold, and I think that... when I cut The Mist, right, it's a book that Stephen King wrote. I actually did not read The Mist before. I mean, I had read it a long time ago, but I did not return to the material because I wanted it to be, this is a unique thing that survives on its own. Same thing I'm doing a show right now about The Omen. Like, I want the show to be its own thing. Obviously, acknowledging the 70s filmmaking and what they originally were intending and all of that stuff, but I really do try to approach it cold. I also don't like to go to set all that much for the same reason. I don't want to know what they were intending to do on the day and why they spent 10 hours with the crane shot and, you know, it died and we had to fight for it and, you know, I don't want to know any of that stuff. I just want to know, like, what is on the film, you know, what are we trying to present to the audience and stuff. That being said, it's also a lot of fun to go to set and work with everyone.
Yeah.
But it is better to me. Like, I don't want to necessarily know that they shot that scene in another hallway that is supposed to be this hallway. I don't want to know, because then I will know, you know, sure. like it all helps the illusion if I'm getting fooled as well.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, it's interesting, you know, thinking about letting other people's work influence you or not influence you. I did stand up for a lot of years. Mm-hmm. As you can tell, I'm hilarious. And, but it's hard if you're like driving to a gig and you're listening to, you know, a stand up, you know, an album or something, because then you get on stage and you start feeling like, oh, I'm starting to let a little bit of that creep into my material.
Right.
I'm starting to sound a little bit like that person. So it seems like it would be sort of the same thing.
Because you want to be true to what you're doing.
Exactly. Yeah. And be original.
Right.
And so.
Yeah, because I don't feel like, you know, doing Damien or The Walking Dead or, I mean, most of these things come from pre-existing titles. Like The Hundred is based off of a book, and Sons of Anarchy came from a book that somebody spent time with on the Hells Angels, I think, or at least it was heavily influenced by it. Walking Dead comes from the comic books, show that I'm doing now. I mean, everything comes from these like pre-existing entities, but they are unique and have to be unique in their own way. So I don't know, but I naturally will watch horror movies. I mean, I like horror movies.
That's what's your favorite horror
movie? Well, I mean, over my living room, last night I'm going through Netflix. I finally watched The Babadook, right? The Babadook, you got to see it. And like somebody else was like, oh, this is going to be the new Babadook. So I was like, fine, I got to watch this movie. So I really watched it. It scared me until the ending. Personally, I got a little, which I'd heard the ending was a little bit of a letdown, which usually
a little weak.
When you have to, like, you take this thing that's, you know, other and it's not real and it's mysterious, and then you suddenly have to make it real and explain what it is, a lot of times that is going to fall apart. So but it was truly scary. And I have a 7-year-old kid, and that boy in that was 7 years old. But anyway, over my living room is a gift from over my couch. You guys at home can't see this, but I'm putting my motioning behind me is a gigantic Italian subway poster for Evil Dead.
Awesome. Oh, that's awesome.
That was a gift to me from Frank Darabont when we wrapped up the first season of The Walking Dead.
That's
and
awesome.
It comes from his personal collection. It was like really meaningful to me, and I love that movie.
Yeah,
and I love more probably the subsequent films, but like that tone of horror and comedy and magic and over the top, gruesome, bloody craziness is kind of fun.
So absolutely.
I don't know. Was that the question? I don't even know if that was the question.
Well, it was part of
the original concepts. And
who are you again?
Now, Evil Dead 1 or 2. I mean,
well, that's what I'm saying. I think the subsequent films, like going back and rewatching Evil Dead, it's a little not the camp that ended up becoming. Like, I felt like they kept like one upping it, you know. Like, and by the time you get to like Army of Darkness, like, I'm really excited about the TV show.
I'd like to cut on that show. That'd be fun.
Oh my word! Right? Like, that'd be fantastic.
Yeah.
Let's get Brian on the phone now.
I know we have
make it off.
We need to get on to that. It would be I did the first season of From Dusk Till Dawn TV show, and that tone, that's a similar tone, and like I was just like a kid in a candy store cutting that. I mean, it was just over the top and insane.
Because it's almost like a remake of the movie and some
stretched out. Yeah, yeah. I got to cut the snake dance scene. I still have this email. Robert Rodriguez sent me an email and he's like, I'm so excited. I got to go direct the snake dance sequence again tomorrow. And I was like, this is amazing. And I'm like, I got to cut this sequence. And it was just awesome. It was really fun. And
Evil Dead is where it's at.
I like over the top fun. I don't like when I don't like horror that's like torturing people just for the sake of torture. But not just for the spectacle of torturing people.
Right. So you're more in the camp of like, I'm just going to speculate. Friday the 13th, Nightmare on Elm Street, those kind
of. Lavalangelo.
Yeah. All right. This guy's cool.
Have you ever seen Notting Hill?
I actually love Notting Hill.
All right.
Oh, man. Both sides. This is great. I don't know why Andrew and I are friends sometimes, because he despises horror movies.
I wouldn't say I despise them.
The first
movie I ever made was like a take off on Scream and I Know What You Did Last
Summer. If I'm like, Andrew, let's watch Day of the Dead or Notting Hill, what would you rather watch?
I don't like Day of the Dead. Dawn of the Dead, I would probably, that would be tough.
Yeah.
I would be like, can we watch them back to back?
Oh.
But I don't know which
that
one
would be
put
a weird
first.
Double picture.
Mm.
Hmm.
That's a great double feature.
Yeah.
The first double feature I ever went to at the drive-in was, what's the Mel Gibson one where he's half blue?
Braveheart.
Braveheart.
Thank odd, you. Odd description for Braveheart. Yeah.
It's all Braveheart followed by Johnny Mnemonic.
Oh, that's
weird.
Yeah. That's real weird.
I don't know why I'm talking about it. It has nothing to do with it.
I saw a double feature with. I'm pretty sure we had figured out my son had just been born and we weren't able to go to the movie theater. My wife and I like love going to the movie theater. Like when we were in college, it's like one of the things we would just go and we had no money. We would pay to see like one movie. And we found this is in South Carolina in the 90s. They would just switch the projector and show a new movie if you stayed in that theater.
Right.
So we would just stay in the theater and like watch like two or three movies. And it's, you know, in the middle of the day, like they didn't care. But anyway, so when we had a kid, we were no longer able to go see a bunch of movies. So we found out, like, oh, when he's tiny, you can go to the drive-in and he'll sleep.
So
I had already seen Snakes on a Plane, like at the midnight screening, but she hadn't seen it. So we went to the drive-in and saw Snakes on a Plane, and I think it was Snakes on a Plane with the like one of the Texas Chainsaw Massacres.
I thought you were about to say The Notebook, and I'm
yes,
like,
no,
what?
That would have been amazing. I'm pretty sure that my like 4 month old son, maybe a little bit older than that. He had to have been a little older than that because we were in Atlanta. But anyway, yeah. So
that's amazing.
That's fun. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you ever go to the New Beverly? You seem like you'd like the New Beverly.
I don't.
No.
It's okay. I'm lame.
No, it's okay. I haven't been in years, but they play movies like Evil Dead every once in a while, and they'll play the sequel or they'll play Army of Darkness.
Oh no, I look at all this stuff and I think, wow, that'd be really cool to like go and do that. Like they recently did a Joe Dante thing at the Egyptian.
I heard about that.
The Burbs. It was a double feature of like The Burbs and Matinee, and I was like, this is amazing. Like I used to be able to quote The Burbs from beginning to end. I love that movie, and then I didn't make it.
It happens.
That's okay.
I got excited about thinking about going.
Yeah. We've talked about you cutting on The Mist a little bit, that you have, and then also with The Walking Dead and Sons of Anarchy, and you know, there's a difference between film and TV.
Right.
What is a little bit of the differences between cutting for a film and then cutting for a television show?
Yeah, I thought when I did my first feature that I would really hate it because I get bored of like an episode. It's like, you know, that moment that I keep getting notes on, it's never going to get better. I don't have what they want or whatever.
Yeah.
And a feature is going to be that, but for like 9 months. Like not, you know, at least with a TV show, it's like a couple weeks of it and then like it's done. But it wasn't like that. It was totally different. Like you just get into like a very weird place with the film and the footage and you get very intimate with it and get to really, you get time to like look back and you do test screenings and you're like, oh, that moment that we never thought would work, it totally works. And like, I remember there was one moment in The Mist where they're trying to leave the market and this Mrs. Carmody's like nannering on about something, telling them, oh, you can't leave, you can't leave. And the older woman takes a can of peas and like chucks it and hits her in the head. And we had taken that out of the movie because we're like, this is silly.
Yeah.
But it had already been cut into our Comic-Con reel and it played in front, you know, we were at one of the larger halls down there and like, you know, you hear 2,000 people laughing. You're like, I immediately was like, that's going right back in.
Yeah.
So that's going back in. So you have time to do that stuff when you're cutting a movie versus a TV show. You have to you have to make very quick decisions.
Sure.
Which I kind of love. I kind of love that about TV. And it does tend to be less of a grueling schedule than you're not going to travel as much. And I do have a young child and I like my wife and my dog and I went to see them at night.
Sure.
So you get to do that more in a feature or on a TV show because it's mostly LA based versus a feature you're going to end up doing some traveling usually.
Gotcha.
So.
And why are you traveling for, are you going to set or what's the?
Yeah, because they're going to, you know, go around the world and they want you to go with them. So that's on the bigger budget stuff. I mean, it's not always the case. I've certainly cut features where I was here. But when I did The Mist, I was only gone for like 2 weeks. We had to lock some larger visual effects sequences. So I went to Louisiana for a couple of weeks. But most of the features I've been doing, and I haven't done one in a while, but what I was doing was in between seasons, talking about the gig in between your main gig, was a friend of mine is Darren Bousman. He and I went to film school together, and he directed Saw 2, 3, and 4. And I've worked with him on three of his movies like in between my other gigs. Like one time I was doing like Sons and I was wrapping that up and then he was doing Mother's Day, so I opened up like I took the film from Mother's Day and moved it down to another cutting room, so I had my son's cutting room in one end of the hall, and the other editor had just like wrapped up his stuff. So I had my assistant load up Mother's Day on the other Avid. So I'd go down there and like cut Mother's Day. And like when those guys would come in, I'd have them in that cutting room just to like keep them separate. But it's all editing. It's all telling the story and finding it, you know, it's just that sometimes you get a little bit more time.
Right.
But TV is cool because you do have to go so quickly. You just kind of got to like hope that you've made the right choice and trust yourself and go with it.
I was going to ask is how many times do you second guess yourself when you're, okay, for example, this is how
I second guess myself in the moment I sit down in the app.
Okay, perfect. Because I do too. So like I'll cut together, you know, a string out of the episode or the scene, let's say, and I'll get it down to where I want it. All the eye lines are right and everything. And then I'll let it simmer for a day and then I'll come back to it if I can.
Right.
And go through, and then I'll end up fixing half the scene because I'm like, oh, that's not how it should run.
Right.
Do you do similar or
very similar? I used to be very different. I used to cut it and make sure that it was perfect before I walked away from, or what I thought was perfect. It wasn't perfect.
Like finished with music and sound effects.
When I started cutting The Shield, we didn't have music. So we had to make it all work, and we couldn't do jump cuts. We couldn't, you know, there was a very strict set of rules on that show. Mm-hmm. It was supposed to kind of feel like you're on a ride along, like you were watching Cops. So we couldn't do all that stuff. So, and I consider it like my film school training because we, the storytelling training, because we couldn't do that stuff. So we had to make it work with what the actors were giving us and what the camera was doing. We couldn't do all those fun editing tricks and stuff.
Right.
But what I used to do, I used to like refine it and like, this is a problem, and like beat it to death. And now what I do is I just try to slap it together as quickly as I can. And like, and knowing that it's not that perfect thing, right?
Yeah.
Knowing that it's not going to be what I present to anybody, which allows you to get this weird freedom with it to try weird stuff. Like I'm going to jump cut this scene, or I'm going to, you talk about getting your eye lines right.
Yeah.
On The Shield, we didn't have eye lines. Like we crossed the line. Oops, sorry.
Oh, it's okay.
We crossed the line all the time because it was a very frenetic show.
Sure.
Crazy. And so a lot of times I totally cross the line and don't even realize that I've done it. And so my assistant has to be like, yeah, Hunter, you need to follow the shot. You just totally crossed the line there, which is like editing 101. And I'm totally cross. I'm getting better about taming it down, but
yeah. Well, it's funny because there are directors that are totally by the book, like don't cross the line. And then there are editors like, I don't give a shit. Going to cut it because it's going
to
make sense.
And I agree with that to some degree. As long as as long as you're getting the emotion across, whatever the emotion is in the scene, whether it's an action sequence or a love sequence or, you know, an informative, you know, walk and talk sequence. Like, but as long as you're getting whatever the important point of the scene is across, it doesn't matter if you cross the line or you start on a wide shot or a tight shot. I mean, that, you know, keep it fun and exciting.
For the people listening, would you mind explaining what crossing the line is, because it can be a complicated
thing
to grasp.
So the line, I mean, how it was explained to me when I was in film school, and it's so changed now with the way that football games and everything are shot.
Yeah.
But the easiest way to do it is imagine a football game when you're watching most of the play take place. You're trying to get the ball from, you know, the left side of the field to the right side of the field. So you want to stay on that side of the field with all of your camera work, right? So you're going to – because if you were to suddenly show the game from the other side of the field, they would be running in the wrong direction.
Right.
It would appear that they are running in the wrong direction. I don't know if that
– Yeah, that
– That's a great
right? – Is that helpful?
That is the best explanation
that I've
ever heard. It
is, because I've seen like diagrams and it's in books and people are like – drawing arrows and stuff.
Right.
And
it's not until they do the playback that they go to the other camera that captured it better, that's from the other side of the field, because now you understand that you're watching just that little bit of time.
Right.
But as the ball is actually traveling, you're going to stay on one side of the line.
Right.
Makes sense.
Yeah. Because, you know, there's this, okay, we're going to draw an imaginary line in between our two bodies and then stay on one side or stay on the other.
Well, and then when it comes down to like cutting, it's over the shoulder is the easiest way to do that, right? Yeah. So like make sure that people are looking, you said, I keep hitting this. Making sure that your eye lines are right means just that it looks like the people are looking at the person they're supposed to be looking at, which is following the line. And it gets tricky when you do a dinner table scene and it's a round table. That's why a lot of times when you see that, the director will give up and they just shoot a steady cam going around and around and around and around, because otherwise they have to shoot every single person's eye line and it's a nightmare.
So
that's why you get, you know, that scene in, oh my gosh, what is it? It's a, Tarantino.
There is a
Reservoir
great,
Dogs.
That's what they do. They just the camera just keeps spinning and spinning and spinning.
There is a great dinner scene in Notting Hill.
With a camera that spins around. No, there really is.
Yeah.
But I don't think the camera does that, though, does it?
No.
Yeah.
They took the time.
They took the time to shoot all their eye lines.
They cared.
Well, I used to work on a show called Gossip Girl, and there was a Thanksgiving scene that Tim Good cut, and he made a diagram of, because they shot into, I think, double A setup.
Oh.
And so he made a diagram of all the cameras.
Right.
So he knew how he would cut the scene.
Oh.
And he had it hanging up on his door for weeks afterwards.
You would be proud of that.
Yeah.
See, now my summer gig is working at a management company, talent management, mm-hmm. which is because that's where I started kind of in this business. And so one of our clients is Donnie Wahlberg, who is on Blue Bloods. And they do a dinner table scene every week on Blue Bloods. That's like just a standard part of the episode. And it's this giant, like, you know, Boston family.
Right.
And so whenever we're talking to, you know, production about, you know, we need to get him out for this or get him out for that, inevitably the dinner table scene comes up is like, we're going to be locked on that stage for like 12 hours.
Oh, yeah.
Everyone hates each other, but this is just what we have to get through.
On Sons, it was our chapel sequences where they bring everyone to the chapel table. They call, they call it the chapel, but it was like the big meeting.
Yeah.
And everyone would be there, and I was just, because, you know, you don't want to do just because they're talking, you cut to them. That's the easy way to do it. You want to find the meaning and the importance. And this is when I learned editing in couplets is helpful. Like, you want to edit with the person that's talking, not just the person that's talking, but like, how does that impact their, as the, what is their relationship to all the people in the room and how are they feeling? You can gain importance by cutting in couplets. Like, if what I'm saying is very awful and it's secretive, but nobody else knows that it is, you cut to the person that understands what that secret is, right? So now that's the couplet, right?
Or like,
so finding what, that's how I found to get through those sequences in my head, at least to motivate myself to get through there, is like, find meaning in like the relationships in with at that table or within those larger sequences. And then that can, that helps me. I've never done a roadmap. I've never had to do
that. That's good advice though, that especially for cutting long scenes that are dialogue heavy.
Because
it gets boring if you're just on the person that's talking, like, oh, okay, we got to find a new way around all this.
Unless you start weeping when you see the coverage and you're like, oh my God.
Yes.
Have you done any directing or do you have any interest in directing?
Sure. Yeah. Well, Brian, I think, was talking a little bit about it. I don't know if I was the one he was talking about, but yeah, we have a little project, a little horror movie that we're trying to get made. I've done some second unit stuff. I've done some visual effects second unit stuff.
Nice.
Yeah. So, I'm trying to think. It was a season premiere, episode 2, first shot of that, I think I shot, or directed with Charlie Hunnam with the gun. I think it was the opening shot. I forget exactly now.
Of Sons?
Of Sons, yeah,
okay.
Nice. But it was just one little shot. But it was fun, though. Yeah, it's you know, get to go out and play.
Yeah.
Some fun.
Yeah, absolutely. Having done the feature stuff, you know, at least from where I look at it in the management business, doing television is a lot different than feature, not just in terms of, you know, the timelines and production, but the people that you're meeting. So how, I mean, is the same thing true for post, or is it a lot easier to kind of make that leap doing a TV show to doing
feature? Well, I think now it's, and I think you guys were talking about this in previous podcasts too, is now there's a lot more feature people coming to TV.
Right.
And so it's a little bit easier to like find, you know, it is all about like who you meet and stuff. And like the pilot episode that I'm on of the show I'm on right now was done by, I think this was his first TV show. He'd never done TV. He'd only done features. He'd done a bunch of Bollywood stuff. And then he did like a couple of the, I think he did two of the Elizabeth movies. Anyway, and then Frank Darabont, you know, he's Shawshank Redemption and Green Mile, and we did The Mist together. But then he's his first TV experience. Well, he had actually done a pilot for called Rains. But then he and I, you know, have done some TV stuff together since then. So I think there's a little bit more of an overlap. And it's a little bit easier for the directors and those guys because they get paid similarly, because they get a piece of that show,
right?
So if they do the pilot, so it's easier for them to come down and not take a pay cut. It's a little more difficult for like their crew and stuff to come down and take a pay cut,
right?
Yeah.
The last episode that we had was Rob Kraut from the union. Mm-hmm. And I talked about that with, you know, well, directors get royalties, and he's like, well, you guys get a health benefits and pension.
Right.
I'm like, all right, that makes sense.
Yes, yes, it's true.
So, yeah.
So do they.
Yeah. Yeah, but they also get an extra paycheck.
I know.
Yeah,
I know. Well, that was one of the things that I've, you know, like when I first started, like I worked a lot of free overtime. I think we all should do that because it's, you know, it's something that we're very lucky to be in this business. And when we do get that chance to prove ourselves, to step up. You know, they could have hired somebody that's already very good at what they do. And they said, no, you know what, like you've shown us that you're a lawyer, or you're a part of the team, or that we believe in you. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I took it as my responsibility when I first got bumped, when I first started assisting, and then when I first started editing, was like, I'm going to pour every bit of this into it that I can and really do that. And then I've been doing it now for a while. So now I'm like, you know, Don, I mean, like the contract that we as like below the line people have with this business and with the producers and with the above the line people will, is that they will pay us for the time that we work, mm-hmm. the time that we put in. That's our reward. That's our part of it. And then they get the reward of having been involved in all of it and getting their royalty checks and getting to continue to see the checks come because they did put up a bigger risk. Mm-hmm. So, but like I should get paid for my overtime. So like it's something right. that, and so should assistants and everyone else. It's something that I really believe in. It's like, that is unfortunately part of the contract that we have right now. So.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I've been lucky. I did a movie where I actually did get a piece of the back end. It didn't make any money. So, but
well, to say that you're there, that you got that. That's
but it does happen. It does happen every once in a while where they go, okay, you know what? Like we can't pay you, but we will reward you similarly to how we are being rewarded because you are putting in extra time. And mm-hmm. I felt like that was very fair. Like,
yeah.
You know, and,
yeah.
And that was cool that they did that.
Yeah. Can you talk a little bit about the internship? Because I mean, is that still something that
base internship's huge?
Oh okay. Yeah, we just yeah. I just hired onto our current show my intern from last year.
Oh nice.
So she very just cool. started. Yeah, so I was like, I finally get to pay it back.
There's yeah
for it happening to me.
That's the that's yeah. the way I feel about this podcast. It's a way of us paying our fortunate jobs that we have.
Right.
Hunter has told me that he's going to give us that Evil Dead.
No, that is mine.
Is that, did I misread that?
Not
understand.
Not happening. No, the ACE internship though is a it's a really big deal. It was life changing to me. I've seen it change other people's lives. And what it is, you apply, and I don't know, a ton of people apply for it. It's only gotten way bigger than when I was a part of. When I was a part mm-hmm. of it was really cool and overwhelming. And now it's just this massive community of people that do get into it and don't get into it. And mm-hmm. there's a lecture series that's part of it that everyone is welcome to come and participate in that really wants to. And it's a phenomenal program and really introduces. Like, I didn't have any contacts when I moved out. My dad was a hospital administrator. I didn't know anybody. I mean, my, you know, the friends that I moved out here with, that was it. Mm-hmm. And they didn't have contacts. So it's a really great way to get your foot in the door and to meet people and to see what the business is like. So yeah, I think they just opened up their application.
So what's the process? What are the requirements?
You know, they want you to have a 4-year degree. I think now they give you or working on a 4-year degree. I think you have.
Then a lot of internships you have to be getting school credit.
So I think in this case you have to have graduated already, okay. But I could be wrong because you actually get paid.
Okay,
you get a minor stipend.
Right.
I did not get a stipend, but those interns on the Black Swan?
That changed. There's been a lot of talk about.
Right.
Yeah, that changes. So now they have to pay them a little bit.
Right.
Which is, you know, whatever, it's fine.
Yeah.
I would have taken it. So they, but then they spend like a week in the, so how do you get into it though? You apply, I think there's a scene you have to edit now. When okay. I did it, I just sent like a resume. Yep. But now there's like a set scene that everybody gets the same amount of footage to mm-hmm. show what they're capable of. I think you can give a reel. There's an interview process where you go, and it's very intimidating, and that is still the same. I found out where you go to like a boardroom on like the – when I did it was on the Universal lot, and I was like, this is amazing. How am I here? This is crazy. Mm-hmm. And then and then they narrow it down, and based off that interview process, they pick them. There's like two people, I think. When I did it the year I did it, there were three.
Three people that got the internship?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, so for the whole year. Yeah.
Competitive then.
It's pretty competitive.
Okay. And with that internship, you get to work with editors in TV shows or films and
yeah, you spend a week in different rooms. So like mm-hmm.
okay.
So I've tried to open up my room the past couple of years and we've had I think three interns in our cutting room. But So they spend like a week with you, and then like a week on a movie of the week, and a week on a feature, and a week on a reality show or a documentary or whatever. Mm-hmm. There's a handful of stuff that you can kind of get into. And if you really are into like documentaries, they would try to get you into a mm-hmm. documentary room. Then you go and you see post houses and what's going on in like dub stages and all these things that you would not be able to just to kind of go and check out and see like really high end people doing what they do best. Cool. And it's really great. And then you work for Ace like at their big events, which is great for networking and socializing and,
right.
and getting to meet people and see how editors and people in the business talk and deal with each other and how they socialize. And, you know, I remember just standing there being like, that's Ann Coates. This is what's happening. And it was just really great. It was really great.
That's awesome. Did you mention to him that sometimes we do a segment where things have gone terribly wrong?
Yes.
Yeah. I've noticed this, and I've been trying to think of what the horror story.
Yeah.
Well, cause obviously I have horror stories.
Yeah.
You can be as vague as
I don't know which ones I want to talk about, though.
Which one's the best one?
Just whatever.
Have you seen
which one
vans blow up or, I don't know.
Did you ever text your boss and call them horrible names and have them read the text in front of you? Because one of our guests had that happen.
That's horrible.
Thinking they were sending the text to someone else.
Oh,
and called
no.
their boss to see you next Tuesday.
Oh, yep. No.
The boss read the text in front of her.
Oh, that's
and she
awful.
Didn't get fired, which is almost worse because then you have to see that person
stuck.
Every day.
Yeah.
So anyway, what's the worst text message you've ever? No, I don't. You know, even if it's just a great learning experience, like here's what I would have done differently had I known. Or you can make something up; it doesn't matter.
Or
no one's ever going to know.
If there are people that you know that have went through something specific,
it doesn't even have to be you specifically.
Yeah, I mean, we've all, you know, everyone makes horrible mistakes. You hope that you didn't make,
right?
But is that more what you want? It was like a learning experience mistake,
usually
something that you wish that you had not done,
or if
something
it's like very a good comedic. Lesson. That's great. Yeah, or if it's just like the DP took the camera and he put it into a swimming pool.
Oh,
the
of
shot
course that's
awesome.
Happened, or we've lost the sound guy, you know, didn't deliver the.
You've given our listeners a lot of gems to help their career, so this doesn't have to be.
I had one, and now it's gone. Where did it go? I just had one.
This is a horror story in the making right now.
That's right. This awful, awful time that we're spending this podcast and me trying to come up with something.
When you're
like,
coming on.
Well, we were
show.
Talking about Friends, and I don't know
the TV show.
No, about other
having
people
friends?
That had. Mistakes that we
should you and I
from.
Just have a conversation while he thinks about
we
it.
Can't. That's fine.
You should play some music or something. I feel like I need like a Jeopardy theme or something.
Yeah.
This is I don't know. Like the horror story that I want to tell isn't one that you can really learn from. It's just one that's an
that's
example
fine.
Of like
totally okay.
Do we have the theme song?
We don't have a theme song.
There's no theme
it.
Song.
There is one.
Is there?
We just don't have it.
Oh right, right.
So someone when I was listening to
the wheel.
There was,
and we don't know where the wheel is right now.
Oh, that's a shame. All right,
We'll play it.
We'll play it. For
we'll put it in for the episode.
You're lying to me.
No,
I'm not.
I can tell that you're lying.
Listen, I lie a lot. Okay, I'm not lying right now.
All right,
that is without a doubt the dumbest thing I've ever heard.
Are you crazy? Or just plain stupid.
The f- are you doing?
Everyone in this room. Is now dumber for having listened to it.
So I was on a show as an assistant editor, and we were really, really crazy hours. And it was, I was getting home at night, in the morning actually, when my wife was waking up to go to work. And there were mornings when like she'd be in the shower and I was still working. And it was so awful. And I remember we were just, I mean, it was a great show and everything and really great people. But there was one day, like I was calling friends of mine on the East Coast on my way home to be like, keep me awake. Like I'm like the sun's coming up or,
yeah.
And, there was one day when I fell asleep on the couch and the producer comes over and like wakes me up and it's like, hey, we're calling it quits today. We're going to go home early. And I was walking out to my car and I looked at him and I was like, I don't know what day it is and why is everything spinning? He patted me on the back and said, all right, get home safely, bud. And I got in my car and I drove home and I should not have done that. And he never should have let me do that.
Right.
And I look back and I'm like, that was a really bad mistake. Like I That was really dangerous. So I don't know. I don't know if that's a good life lesson.
It's something to learn from.
Sleep.
Though.
Learn how to sleep.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. Well, I've been on shows where, like, when we were doing our original pilot for Stitchers, and we ran really, really late doing some stuff, and the producers were walking around, and they were, and we were just shooting down by LAX. It's not like we were, you know, out of the 60-mile zone or whatever where they have to put you up. But they were walking around and saying, you know, whoever needs a hotel room tonight, let us know,
right,
and we'll put you guys up, and you know, the vans will take you there and they will bring you back in the morning and get your car.
That's how it should be.
So it's like, but it is good to know because, you know, they've had a lot of things where, like, you know, especially like people that are doing Grip and Electric and the drivers and stuff are driving home. And I know there've been incidents where people have like been killed.
There have been. Yeah. When I first moved out here, a friend of mine is an electric and he had a friend that died because of sleep deprivation on the 405.
Yeah. Yeah. So
there's a life lesson. So that's good. That worked out. Good. Hey, look at that. Hey. Look at that bull.
Smiles all around. Somewhat.
To wrap this wonderful interview up, do you have any advice that you can give to anyone that is wanting to be an editor like yourself?
Edit. Just edit.
Just edit.
Keep editing. Yeah. When I first moved out, I mean, I knew that, like, the advantage that I think that I had and that friends of mine that I think have found success in whatever their given field or craft is to know what they want to do when they come out here. Because when you move out and you say, I'm coming out to LA or whatever, and I just want to make a movie. I just want to be in the business. I just want to be on set. So that's not helpful. Like everybody wants that. Everybody that's 16 years old that watches movies wants that. But to say, I actually care about working in camera, then I can get you a job because I have a friend that's a DP and he's shooting a movie right now. And maybe it's not a job. Maybe you can go and hang out with him or call them and ask him how he got his start. And that to me is one of the things I think is really important is knowing what it is that you want to pursue and then doing everything you can to get next to that. My friend Darren, who went and made the Saw movies, knew that he wanted to write and direct, and he got fired from job after job after job because he knew that that's what he wanted to. It worked out for him because he was always devoting his craft to writing and to attempting to direct and using his contacts that he was making to get there. When I moved out, I made sure that the jobs that I got, if I wasn't editing, because I was a vault librarian for Fox Family Channel, which ended up becoming ABC Family Channel, but I worked directly with the editors. I worked right next to the editors. I worked next to the assistant editors and got access to them, became friends with them, and could learn from them because of that. So I think it's always knowing what it is that you want to get to and following that. And in the case of editing specifically, once you're in the cutting room, I mean, finding editors that let you edit and then sharing the scene with them, whether they take it or not, I think is really important part of the process. And it's something that I really encourage with my assistants. And I say to them, look, I'm probably also going to cut the scene, but then we can have a showdown and like see what great gem you found that I didn't and what gem I found and why I approached the scene the way that I did and why you approached the scene the way that you did.
That's awesome.
And then that's a way that we can actually help each other out, you know, and make me a better editor and make them a better editor and a better storyteller. I mean, there is no reason, even if you have a dick for an editor, that you can't take a scene home and be cutting it.
Right.
Like real footage with the real goal. And then, and even if they suck and they're not going to share it with you, you can at least look at it and go, oh, that's how they did it. You know, and get the comparison that way and learn. There is no reason why you shouldn't be doing that.
I had a friend that did that on a number of different shows that he was assisting. And he, after the show had aired, he would take that media from the Avid or the ISIS, and he would take it home and he would on his own time recut the episode the way he would have cut it.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, and granted, it would take him most of the season to do.
Right,
but he learned how to become an editor that way, and try to keep his schedule. You know, okay, I'm only going to take 2 hours to cut the scene, or you know, something like that.
I mean, that's really the hard part when you first get to cutting is keeping up with it all and knowing what your goal should be and when it's when you're falling dangerously behind and when you're not.
Yeah. Do you try to keep up to camera?
No, because it's too crazy. You can't keep – schedules don't matter anymore. I mean, at least not the shows I've been on. Like,
lucky.
They're just crazy. they're nuts.
JJ's edited 3 scenes from Scorpion while we've been
– Oh, is that what you've been doing on your phone?
Yeah.
Oh, that's pretty cool. You have the new Avid app on your phone.
He's got iAvid.
Yeah. Yeah, and by the way, Avid, not Final Cut, not Premiere. It's I figured that's always a question. It's like, no, it's just Avid.
Yep,
because it's fast. But yeah, no, it's just taking the time to edit though.
That's key.
What's the best way to learn Avid if you don't? You're just sitting there going, Avid, I want to edit. Sucks. How do I get it?
To learn. Yeah, you can download it for free. I think there's a free version.
I think there's a 30-day trial, which you need more than 30 days to learn.
Yes, you do. But there's workarounds. But
it's, has it changed? Because when I was in high school, we had a bunch of Final Cut stations in our media program, and then we had an Avid. And everybody was like, you guys have an Avid. And in my mind, I was like, oh, it's this giant system, and you're going to spend $500,000 to get Avid. I didn't even know what it was.
It's not like that. You can get a software-only version that runs on a laptop. But
I've got software version on here.
Well, I'm proud of you.
Well done. I don't. I don't have an Avid at home.
No?
I don't cut at home. I used to, but I don't anymore.
It's nice. I mean, I'm doing side projects and stuff. I have a wonderful couch and a client monitor.
That's right.
So, it lends well to it. But
how do you, because you're talking, just very briefly, because you're talking about the crazy schedules and, you know, driving home and the sun's coming up and all that. I think that some people come out here and they think this isn't strictly business related, but it's like, oh, and I'm going to be able to keep my relationship together. That's not going to be a problem because I'm, you know, I'm going to be working and doing what I love and hopefully making good money. And, you know, this part will just be fine. And it's like you start doing it and the hours are insane. And especially if, you know, you've got people that are not working in the industry and they work like a 9-to-5 gig. Yeah. So how do you,
it's paid, especially with you, and it's, you've just got divorce after and, divorce. You just mean, I mean, it's just really
That's
sad.
What you would recommend doing?
No.
Or,
no, it's I'm really, sorry. No, it's terribly sad. And I'm very fortunate. I dearly love my wife and she's very supportive of me in this business. But yeah, it's awful. I mean, it's really, really bad.
Yeah.
I mean, in the hours and the work environments, editing's a little bit less, but like, you know, when you take a crew and they go away for like 6 to 9 months or whatever, I mean, like it's just a terrible, terrible situation as far as like trying to maintain a relationship goes. It's really hard.
Yeah.
And then people I know that moved out here that didn't have a relationship that are trying to get one started once they're here, it's just awful. I mean, I know people that are like, I need to not stay here to wait for visual effects to come in tonight because I'm single and I'm only getting older and I got to go meet a mate and like laid it out for me like that. And you were like,
wow,
go home. Yeah. You're right. Go out tonight and go and find somebody to, you know, start a life with because there's no reason to be wasting it sitting here in the cutting room. Like there's priorities get a little screwed up sometimes. In this business.
Yeah.
So I mean, you just say this is the time that I'm setting aside, I'm going to make this happen, or is it, I mean,
well, when I first started,
she's flexible, which is lucky for you.
Yeah, when I first started, like I said, I donated a lot of free time,
right?
Because that was what was really important, was starting off my career. I'm talking like years, not like, oh, for a couple episodes, like no, like years. I was terribly nervous and thought that I was going to get fired, and wanted if that did happen to be able to look back and say, well, I did everything I could because this was the dream that I'm choosing to follow. And my wife was also following a dream, so I was really lucky. She's wanted to work in the art business, so she, before I went to film school, was working in the Smithsonian and left that to go to school with me, where she became like an office manager at an architecture firm. So when we moved out to LA, we were like, okay, we're going to support each other. And so she ended up working at Museum of Contemporary Art. She got really lucky with that.
Cool.
So we were able to like really follow our dreams together, which was very cool, and we were able to do that to help each other out. We're lucky we had money income, so you're able to kind of help each other out.
Money's nice.
Right.
Yeah, it helps.
Yeah, definitely does.
But as far as, I mean, trying to get home and when you're home, be home is my thing. Like, not still be dealing with other stuff.
It makes sense why you don't cut at home now.
Yeah, I try to not cut at home.
Yeah.
Yeah. And now I have a 7-year-old. He doesn't need to see dogs mauling, destroying people.
He's already seen snakes on a plane. Yeah,
that's right. He outside his bedroom is this limited edition poster of zombies that we got that Drew Struzan did. And so like he's like, daddy, that poster scares me. And so now we've named the like main zombie as Fred. And I'm trying to convince him that Fred is going to protect him, that nobody would dare come get him. Cause we've put up all the posters upstairs and like the Mist posters up there. And there's like Sons of Anarchy. He could not handle the Dusk Till Dawn one. That one had to come down. There was just too much blood and some vampire woman.
I love that the art on your walls is scaring him.
That's awesome. Yeah. Well, the first thing he spelled out was Evil Dead laying on the couch. He was like, E-V-I-L.
That's the start of a horror movie, actually.
He hates scary things, though. Can't stand scary stuff. It's really kind of heartbreaking.
Well, he gets to be about 12, so I'm sure it'll change.
That's right. Then I can start to crank up the horror stuff. Yeah. Share it with him.
What movie would you like, other than Evil Dead, what movie would you like to share with him?
What we're waiting to share with him, my wife and I both, is Neverending Story.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's nice. So weird and trippy, and like we're like, okay, that's going to really freak him out. But
yeah, he's flying dogs.
Yeah, you know. So I got him to get through. Right, but the flying, Falcor's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a giant flying dragon. People are like, I guess he is in the movie. But he's, he's a flying Cocker Spaniel. Anyway, and I had a Cocker Spaniel when I saw the movie, so I was like, oh, it's so great. my dog, my Muffin was his name, and he was like,
nice.
He would terrorize people in the neighborhood. I'd be like, I'm going to let Muffin out if you don't, you know, give me back my toy or whatever. Sorry, total sidetrack. Got him to watch E.T. and Jurassic Park, though. So those are like big breakthroughs, And he was crying at the end of E.T., and I was crying at the end of E.T., and he looked at me. He's like, I'm just sad. And I was like, I know, me too. It's it was great. It was awesome.
That is awesome.
It was a good moment.
It's bittersweet.
Yeah.
Man. Are we going to go off on that? I mean, how are we going to beat E.T.?
I don't know. I don't know if we can.
Well, you said you were from West Virginia.
Yeah, you honed in on that early on,
Well, I went to thing called the Black Walnut Festival a couple years in a row.
Okay.
Which is in a town called Spencer, West Virginia.
Okay, I'm not familiar with Spencer. What
it's
part?
It's very small.
Most towns in West Virginia are small.
Yeah.
It's about 45 minutes from, it's not Charleston, but there's another, maybe it's Charleston.
Wheeling?
No, there's another slightly bigger.
Huntington?
No. No. Nope. And we're not ending this podcast.
Morgantown? Well, Morgantown's where the college is. Charleston is the capital.
I don't.
There's another college called Marshall University, which that movie, We Are Marshall, it's where my dad, my mom, and my wife's dad randomly went to school.
I'm just going to.
Yeah, they're in the same class. We didn't know that.
Wow.
We met in college, and our parents went to college.
That's crazy.
Yeah, weird, right?
That is weird. Well, basically, the story was going to lead to the fact that I once got slapped by Miss West Virginia, and we have it on video.
Oh. Which is perfect for an audio-only podcast.
Oh, I'm not going to I'm not going to play.
Oh, you're just going to
I would just
let me know
sharing
that it's out there.
Story with you.
It's what did you do that got you slapped by Miss West Virginia? Because it's kind of her job to be nice.
I asked her. I said, will you slap me? Because we did an old... JJ and I had another podcast called 10 Minutes with Andrew and JJ. And we'd go to a lot of red carpet events and stuff and interview people, do that kind of thing, like actually on camera. And so we would... we had a thing where we would slap each other.
So that,
more of me slapping Andrew.
It was a lot of him slapping. Yeah. I would be like, I want to go to Denny's and get a waffle. And you'd be like, we're here for work. And then he'd slap me.
Slap. Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah.
Right.
It was like your thing.
Yeah. And so we were there and I was like, will you slap me on camera? And she went for it. Because
she hit him hard.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm surprised he still has a jaw.
Did you fall or did you take it?
No, but I was afterwards. I was like, I mean, I was doing this for comedic purposes. She was not messing around.
they don't mess around in West Virginia.
No.
Yeah. Strong women.
Yeah.
Almost heaven.
Mm-hmm. That's right. It is almost heaven.
Do you have a Twitter page or do you have a Twitter account?
I do, but don't use it.
Don't use it?
No.
Okay.
Facebook, anything. Parkersburg. It's between Parkersburg and Charleston, halfway.
Oh, all right. I think I have family from Parkersburg.
You might. I don't know.
West Virginia's not a big state.
It's not a big state?
No, population-wise, at least.
Yeah, there's like 15.
Lots of hills.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of...
coal.
Yep.
There's a lot of coal.
Yeah, a lot of coal.
So people can't follow you on Twitter, which is unfortunate.
They can, but I won't really interact. No,
yeah.
I mean... I have it because I feel like I should, and I thought, I'll use Twitter for like, it was when like the following had just started, I think, I loved it, and I was like, I want to talk about this, but I don't want to do it on Facebook, so I'll start a Twitter account, I'll talk about like shows that I'm watching and that I like and movies and make it about that.
Yeah.
And that lasted a day. Like, it was the pilot of the following, and then school has linked into it for a couple of things, but like, I'm sorry.
Do you have a website? Do you have...
No.
I don't know.
I made one back in college.
Was it for GeoCities site?
Yeah, it was a GeoCities site.
I had a GeoCities also.
Yeah.
Nice.
I had a spinning disco ball.
Yeah, because they were awesome.
Yeah, I loved that website.
Yes.
Oh.
I got so mad at my parents' computer when I couldn't figure something out. HTML.
Well,
Facebook. I'm on Facebook.
You're on Facebook. Yeah. Okay.
And I do totally welcome people to reach out if they're looking to
start where I was going for.
Yeah.
100%.
What is your home address?
No.
Okay.
No.
Well, we also have a Twitter and we have a Facebook page. And
so we'll put your home
link to my
there.
Face. No, link to my Facebook on there and totally, okay. Yeah, message me. That's fine. Or
okay.
Awesome.
Post to my wall, whatever.
Perfect.
Are you, so you're pretty involved with that internship? Or is
I'm
just
I'm a big yeah.
You're
I mean,
supporter.
We host people in our okay. room, and we're hiring people. And I've spoken at the panels. And
okay,
yeah.
So you're but, around.
Yeah, exactly.
All right.
Cool. Well, again, you can follow us on Twitter and Facebook. And Andrew, you have a Twitter page, right?
The Real Zuber.
Yeah. The Real Zuber.
And I'm sorry. What?
The Real Zuber.
How would you spell that?
THERALZ. UBER.
Oh, all right.
Because that's my Zuber. Last name is Zuber.
Oh, perfect. Okay. Yeah. You're the real one, not the fake one.
Yeah, I was like, it'd be funny if I'm like legit, like anyone cares
right.
if I'm, I have like 9 followers. So, you know.
You should get the
I need the check mark.
The check mark. Yeah.
No, that's right. It's been certified.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm certifiable.
And I'm JJ Geiger 711.
And we are the early call time.
Yep.
Or is it just early call time?
I think it's just early call time.
Okay.
Yeah.
60 episodes in. I don't know
yeah.
what our Twitter is.
But anyway.
This was awesome.
Thank
time
you
for lunch.
Yeah, thank yeah. you for being on the show. It was really fun.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah.
It was a lot
yeah.
of fun.
And until next time, what should we do before that, Andrew?
We should listen to the outro.
And that's a wrap. Didn't get your fill at Craft Services and you want more? Check out earlycalltime.com for more podcasts and information pertaining to the ever-growing entertainment industry. And remember to tell your friends about us via Facebook and Twitter. Thanks for listening.